14 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Hello, hello. Today we'll be hearing from Mark Devlin, who is a long-standing English radio and club DJ specializing in hip-hop. Although he's interested in all aspects of conspiracy, true nature of reality, and human consciousness, his area of special interest is in the methods by which the music industry is being systematically subverted by the control system. Earlier this year, he recorded a conversation with David Icke about what really goes on beneath the surface of the music biz. Hello, Mark. How are you today?
Hey, Lana. Good to kick it to a fellow music head.
Hey, so were you in London for the Olympics?
No, I was avoiding the Olympics like the plague.
So you didn't see any alien invasions?
No, I was watching out for them, but I didn't see any. But we got the Paralympics to go, so who knows?
That's right. Well, before we get into the ugly business of music, maybe you can tell us your background, such as when and how you became a radio and club DJ.
Okay, well, I've always been a music fan, always loved music. Bought my first record when I was 5, which was nothing too corny. It was actually Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, so you know, it was a pretty cool song. And I spent all my sort of childhood years just listening to chart music, pop music, whatever was on the radio. And in my teenage years, I kind of refined my tastes and got into black music, basically. Soul, funk, hip-hop, reggae, that sort of thing. And I sort of fine-tuned my listening and went down that route and decided that I really wanted to become a DJ and I wanted to play music for a living. So I got started in 1990, 22 years ago now, and in the intervening years I managed to get onto radio and became a club DJ, and I've been fortunate enough to play in over 40 countries.
Wow.
Most of them in Europe, actually, but a few further afield, like Australia and various places in Africa, New Zealand. Played in Sweden, but I've never actually played in Italy for some reason.
Well, I'm a big fan of the UK trip-hop, so maybe you were spinning some of that as well.
If there's any Italian promoters listening, hit me up. And I've also been a music writer as well. I've written for various music magazines. The main one was Blues and Soul, which was a long-running UK black music publication. So yeah, that's been my career really so far.
So have you and your DJ friends noticed a big change in the audience these days versus, I don't know, 10 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. It's something I talk about all the time with other DJs and other sort of music heads of my generation, because it sort of takes somebody of my age and generation to have noticed a shift that's taken place, a sort of generational conditioning, if you like. And it's been the subject of a number of podcasts, which I've started to do. I put the first one out last year, and the first few that I did were music-based, but I've moved those into conversation-based more recently. And we are discussing things like how the music has changed, how lyrical content has changed, and other more sinister stuff, such as symbolism and imagery in videos, and how music is used for mind control purposes. So the subject goes very deep.
That's
and
right.
It's not something that many people are comfortable with talking about, but it is the truth. And, you know, sometimes the truth is inconvenient, but you've got to go there.
That's right.
And so that's what I do.
Well, we're going to get into some of those topics. But first, I just want to talk about the music industry. And do you think it's been controlled from the start? I mean, because we could take this all the way back to even classical music.
Well, there is evidence to suggest that it's been controlled all along. But my particular area of interest is the music that I've played over the years, which, broadly speaking, is hip-hop and R&B, but mainly hip-hop. And what I've noticed is, as I said, I got started in 1990. And if you speak to any sort of bona fide hip-hop head, hip-hop purist, they'll tell you that the early 90s was considered something of a golden age for hip-hop. It's like the golden years. Obviously, hip-hop got started in the 1980s, but by the time the 90s had rolled around, everything was very creative and very innovative. You had a lot of great acts and groups that had very distinct identities. The lyrical content of tracks was very potent, very meaningful. It was addressing things like social issues, police brutality. There was a phase in hip-hop that started talking about the Nation of Islam and the Five Percenters, which was a sort of faction of Islam that a lot of the hip-hop community got into. It was just interesting stuff, you know, it was a fascinating period. And so things kind of trotted along until about 1997. And I've pinpointed 1997 as a year where there was a noticeable change in what was happening with hip-hop music in terms of lyrics, in terms of the imagery of the artists. And interestingly, I was recording a podcast last month with a fellow UK DJ and also an MC. And independently of what I'd said, they came up with the suggestion that 1997 is when things started to go pear-shaped.
Interesting.
So there seems to be some validity to that year. And 97 was a pretty dark year generally in the UK because we had Blair coming to power, which is never a good thing. And 97 was also the year that Princess Diana was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And in hip-hop, it was the year that the Notorious B.I.G. was assassinated, alternately known as Biggie Smalls, a very high-profile rap artist. And a lot of people kind of pinpoint the murder of Biggie as marking a definite downward spiral in what was happening to the music. And so from 97 onwards, the lyrical content of mainstream hip-hop was almost exclusively about materialism, consumerism, brands, champagne,
bling,
gold chains,
getting
partying
laid
in the club, guns, gold rims. And you might think that's just part of the natural cycle of music, you know, it changes over time and it's just a trend. But we're now in 2012, 15 years on, and nothing's really changed. So 15 years is quite a long trend.
Oh, yeah.
And so that kind of signaled to me that something was changing. Although at the time, I didn't really pay too much attention to it because I wasn't into any of this so-called conspiracy stuff back then. And I just kind of went with the flow, as most of us did.
Hey, I just want to say also the 90s, we had the grunge era. I was up in Seattle then, which was awesome. That's some of my favorite music, alternative-wise.
Sure.
And there were a lot of people that had a lot to say, of course, during that time. They actually wrote their own music and didn't care so much about what they look like, like today.
Exactly. I think the 90s was a great time for music generally, not just the music that I listened to, but, you know, there was indie music, there was Britpop,
house
music, you know, club music. It was all good. The movies were good. It's just a great decade, or at least the first part of it was. But anyway, we fast forward sort of 11 years from there, really, to 2008, which is another year that I've kind of pinpointed as marking a definite downward change. By 2008, you had a whole breed of new artists coming through for the first time. The likes of T-Pain, Akon, Flo Rida, Lil Wayne, and a whole bunch of others. And if you listen to the sort of music that these guys are making, in terms of lyrical content and also production style, it's pretty clear that something is changing again, because it bears no resemblance at all to the stuff that went before it, which is taken to be hip-hop. And so you listen to guys like Lil Wayne these days, and Drake, and Nicki Minaj, who I'm sure we'll get into a bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And these are classed as rappers. And to me, and to many others, they're not rappers at all. What they're making is not hip-hop music. It's completely different. You've got auto-tune everywhere, which, again, we can go into. But auto-tune is the trademark sound of the artist T-Pain. And it's this sort of robotic, kind of computerized, horrible vocal sound.
I don't know how people can listen to that and just think it's awesome, you know?
Exactly. It was first popularized by Cher.
Oh, yeah.
Do
You Believe,
right? On a track
called
Life After Love in the mid-90s, which was awful. And that record was sort of dismissed as a corny pop tune. But now it's all over so-called hip-hop and R&B records. What's going on? Well, something is, clearly.
Cyborgs.
Indeed. And so by 2008, I was sort of paying attention to other stuff, what you might call conspiracy stuff, although I don't like that word. But I started reading books by David Icke, and I'd started paying attention to the idea that the world is actually nothing like the version of events that you get on the mainstream news or that the government tells you. And I started looking into all these related subjects. And around about 2008, I got turned on to a website called Vigilant Citizen, vigilantcitizen.com. And it's a guy in Canada. Nobody knows his real name, actually. He's just known as VC. And what he does is examine the symbolism and the imagery that is getting placed in music videos and live stage shows. And he's very knowledgeable. He breaks it all down and explains how all this occult imagery is being subliminally placed right in front of our eyes and what it actually means and what it might be designed to do in terms of the effect it has on the human mind. So I found that quite interesting. And by 2010, which is not long ago really, I underwent what I would describe as a conscious awakening, which is where I read David Icke's Human Race Get Off Your Knees book. Mm-hmm. And suddenly everything kind of slotted into place for me. And it was like a light bulb went off in my mind and all the pieces kind of fitted together.
So in your mind, why are all these occult symbols showing up in videos and live shows these days?
Well, it comes down to the suggestion that the world is actually controlled by a group of secret societies, a cabal, a network, whatever you might choose to call it, those that consider themselves the rightful rulers of the planet, as Ian Crane would put it. You know, this shadowy kind of group that controls governments, controls corporations, and controls pretty much everything.
Including the music business.
Oh, absolutely.
All the record labels. Yeah, they're owned by... There's this great book called The Hitmen that basically exposes the hustlers who rule over the music industry, and they're basically the mob.
Exactly. I've heard of that book, yeah. And so I came to realize that this group, this cabal, this network of elites, whatever you want to call them, hijack any profession or any trade or any industry that they feel can help advance their agenda. And clearly the entertainment business, consisting mainly of Hollywood movies and the music industry, are a major part of this. And it became clear that the placing of this imagery and symbolism in videos is their way of mind controlling the masses and also kind of giving you a little indicator of who's really in control and who's really running things. Because it seems to be the case that whenever these guys do anything, there's usually three or four reasons why they're doing it. You know, there's a main one, but there's all sorts of subsidiary reasons as well. And one of them definitely seems to be that they're kind of rubbing our noses in it. By placing this symbolism in plain sight in these videos that are on MTV and, you know, mainstream TV channels daily and are getting soaked up by teenagers, they're kind of subliminally letting everyone know who's boss.
Mm-hmm, I see. Well, it amazes me that humans are so susceptible to control via the subconscious mind. I mean, just a visual or a vibration, it seems, is all it takes these days.
Well, indeed, yeah. I mean, there's so much information about how Hollywood movies and therefore music videos as well have a subliminal effect on the viewer without them realizing. You know, there's been all sorts of studies done with advertising to show how subliminal messages in ads make people go out and buy products without them even knowing it's going on. Mm-hmm. So, I became aware that this was happening. And Vigilant Citizen gives you some great examples of what goes on in these videos. And you come to realize that all through music videos by the very biggest artists in the industry, so if you take the top 10, 15 names that are having all the big hits and that are household names, they're the ones whose videos are full of this stuff. And you have all seeing eyes straight off the back of a dollar bill. You have pyramids, Masonic compasses, the covering of one eye. I mean, that's the classic. I've actually got a montage picture of all the artists that have been photographed covering their eye.
Hey, I do have to say, sorry to interrupt you, but I do have to say about the one eye thing. I've taken photos with one eye just because artistically it looks pretty cool. It looks nice. It feels nice. So maybe sometimes it doesn't mean that they're in on it, but it's just artistically it's pleasing.
Well, yeah, I've heard it said in defense of why it's done that it's a cool pose. It's just a pretty cool thing to do. But when everyone's doing it, you start to ask yourself, why haven't they found a new way to look cool? There are other ways of doing it. But yeah, the covering of one eye is all through the videos. And one of the most disturbing things I've seen in a video was for Umbrella, the Rihanna video of 5 years ago. And in it, there's a split-second shot, which is how they do subliminals, you know, very, very quickly, so it doesn't register in the conscious mind. And Rihanna is inside a pyramid, surprise, surprise, and she's striking a pose, which has obviously been computer graphic amended, because it's not a pose that you can actually anatomically achieve naturally. Mm-hmm. And the pose is emulating the Baphomet goat head, the goat of Mendes, which is a classic sign of Satanism. And, you know, it's quite a disturbing thing to find in a video for a number one single that's getting played throughout the world.
I always wonder who came up with the idea. Is it someone who wrote the treatment for the video? Is it the manager? Is it the artist? I mean, who's the guy that's responsible here?
It does make you wonder. I found myself wondering the same thing with the opening ceremony of the London Olympics recently, which was directed by Danny Boyle, the film director. And I found myself wondering, you know, does Danny know what he's doing? Is he complicit in this? Or have they just said, right, Danny, here are some scenes we want in this ceremony. It's up to you how you present them, but these have got to be in there.
Yeah.
It does make you wonder.
The central command speaks.
Exactly. But clearly something's going on there as far as I'm concerned.
So how do you think the music industry goes about choosing the next big superstar, like the next Lady Gaga?
Well, it's clear to me now that to make it as an artist, you have to allow yourself to be absolutely controlled by the industry in every way. And I think it's happening more so now than used to be the case. I think artists used to be able to express themselves artistically far more so than they can now. And it strikes me that at any given time now, there's a kind of top 10 of positions that are available, and artists are selected to fill those positions. So there's a number one rapper position available, and Jay-Z has been slotted into place. And if it wasn't Jay-Z, it would be somebody else. So these artists are selected just to have that kind of exposure. And I think they're kind of selected on different grounds. As far as rappers go, it's well known that a lot of hip-hop artists come from the ghetto, they come from the hood, you know, poverty. Mm-hmm. And it's reasonable to assume that record companies say to these guys, look, you know, you sign on the dotted line, you do what we say, you join the corporation, and you'll never be poor again. And obviously, for these guys that have never had money in their lives, that's a very attractive prospect, so they sign on the dotted line. Then you have artists like, for example, Lady Gaga, who strikes me as someone that always just wanted fame at any cost. And there's probably a lot of these. And they're promised fame and fortune. You know, you'll never be that shy, awkward kid again that nobody liked at school. You'll be adored by millions. And that's incentive enough for them to sign on the dotted line. But I think so many of them don't realize what they're signing up for. And of course, once you've crossed the line, you can't go back. And you have to do what they say in every way. And I think a lot of artists discover that to their peril.
The question is, what is that line? How are these mind control techniques implemented and used on them?
Well, exactly. And this leads on to the question of mind-controlled artists, because it's my view that music is used to mind-control the public.
Oh, yeah.
But of course, you also have the artists themselves who are mind-controlled, and this is where we get into the very ugly area of MKUltra. Monarch programming, mind control, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners will be aware of.
Yes.
But in a nutshell, it's a trauma-based mind control technique that was apparently developed by the Nazis during the Second World War. And when the war finished, a lot of these scientists were covertly brought into the US and started working for various factions of the government, including the CIA, in seeing how MKUltra mind control could be used for various things, such as to program Manchurian candidate-style assassins. And there's a suggestion with that recent movie theater shooting in Colorado that might be what was going on. And then when it comes to the entertainment industry, there's evidence that a lot of Hollywood actors have undergone this, and there's absolute evidence that certain music artists have undergone it. And, you know, they're subjected to horrific, traumatic experiences, and it causes the mind to shatter into different compartments or personas or alters, as they're called.
What kind of evidence have you found for this trauma-based mind control?
Well, it's various documents and various videos on YouTube, but it's coming from lots of different sources, and they all tend to be pretty much agreeing with each other. And you get certain names of artists, and there's a lot of agreement on which artists may well have undergone this. And again, going back to the videos, what they tend to do is place little visual indicators in videos and record sleeves and such to show that a particular artist has undergone mind control. And one of the prime candidates is Nicki Minaj, who is allegedly a rapper, but a classic textbook example of a mind control subject. So going back to the idea of alters, these different personalities, you have the sort of front alter, which is the everyday personality that engages with the public and is the one that appears in interviews and such. But then you have all these different alters that are created by the mind control process. And when you listen to Nicki Minaj records, on track, she breaks into all these different kind of accents. She's got this amusing British accent that she does, which everyone thinks is really cute. And she does it in interviews as well. So she'll be being interviewed, and then she suddenly adopts this British accent. And she's got this alter ego, which again appears on her records, called Roman Polanski, which is obviously an allusion to the film director Roman Polanski, who directed Rosemary's Baby, and interesting guy. He's worth looking up. And she put a track out called Roman's Revenge as well, in which she kind of switches on the track into this other voice and this other person. So there's some indicators there. And then you've got Lady Gaga, who, well, it's all in the name, really. Lady Gaga often appears in male, as a male persona, wearing a suit and sort of dressed up as a male, as an alternative personality. And there's been a trend in hip-hop and R&B in recent years for artists to have alter egos. And I'm not suggesting that all these artists are subjects of mind control, but it ties into this idea of artists having alters. So Beyonce put out a record a few years ago called I Am Sasha Fierce. And Sasha Fierce is this alternative personality that she takes on when she gets on stage. And in interviews, she said, oh, I feel like somebody else when I'm on stage. You know, I don't feel like I'm myself. And then you've got the likes of Eminem, has always been known as Slim Shady, and Jay-Z's got multiple pseudonyms, and a lot of them do. And then going back to these visual indicators of mind control, there are various things which, when you see them in videos or on sleeves or in artwork, are, again, an allusion to MKUltra mind control. One of them is the butterfly, named after the monarch butterfly, which is part of the same process. You see butterflies everywhere, on record sleeves. Mariah Carey put out a record called Butterfly a few years ago. You see them all over videos. You see dolls. Whenever you see dolls around, particularly with mutilated limbs, that's always a good indicator of mind control. And interestingly, Nicki Minaj's pseudonym is Barbie. She's known as Barbie Doll. And her fans, her female fans, are known as Barbs. So, you know, she's shouting out all my Barbs. And of course, the male fans are called Kens. So they're not even trying to hide that one. and then pink hair is another one. Nicki Minaj has always got pink hair. Katy Perry is often seen with pink hair. And the Mickey Mouse ears are the other one. Have a look at how many artists in promo pictures and videos have Mickey Mouse ears.
Mickey Mouse Why? Club.
Yeah, the Mickey Mouse Club, exactly, which was the breeding ground for Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, and Christina Aguilera, all famous attendees of the Mickey Mouse Club, which of course ties into the Disney Corporation.
That's right.
Again, There's lots to read and find out about Disney. Disney is not all it seems. But these Mickey Mouse ears are everywhere. And again, people might say, oh, it's a way of looking cool. It's a way of looking distinctive. Well, why has everyone got friggin' Mickey Mouse ears then? You know, there are other ways to do it. So they all seem to be indicators of mind control in the industry. And you never used to see these things in videos.
Mm-hmm.
But when you know what you're looking for, and when you start to pay attention, you see them everywhere. And you realize that over the past few years, the agenda has been stepped up big time.
I've also heard you mention the ritual sacrifice of hip-hop artists. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, this is a subject area which a lot of people may kind of agree with everything I've discussed so far. But when you bring the idea of the music industry ritually sacrificing its artists into the picture, it's too much for a lot of people. And they're like, whoa, you know, I'm not going there. That's enough now. But I'm not definitely saying that this goes on. But at the same time, having discovered what I have about the industry, about what's really going on in the world, about the nature of reality, I wouldn't necessarily discount it. It's a theory which most famously has been put forward by Professor Griff, who was formerly of the group Public Enemy.
Yeah, we've tried to get him on Red Ice a couple times.
Oh, really?
I've chatted with him, but it just never happened.
Oh, that would have been great. To have got Griff, that would have been incredible. I've tried to get him myself, actually, for my podcast, but he's a difficult guy to reach. But yeah, Professor Griff was known as the Minister of Information for Public Enemy, and he was actually sacked from the group many years ago. I think he was sacked in about 1990 for alleged anti-Semitic comments.
Yeah.
That convenient phrase. So he kind of went his own way. And he's always been an outspoken figure. But in recent years, he's put forward this theory that the large number of artists in the hip-hop and R&B field who just happen to have died in strange circumstances might actually be part of a program of ritual sacrifice. And when you look into the elites, if you want to call them that, you know, the cabal, and what they've been involved with through the ages, sacrifice is definitely on the agenda. And unfortunately, human sacrifice didn't end many hundreds or thousands of years ago. It still goes on now in various forms. War is one, false flag terror events are another, and so Griff's suggestion is that these artists being knocked off by the industry is all part of this satanic sacrificial agenda. And so when you look at the number of artists that have died, it started pretty much with Tupac in September 1996, who died in a hail of bullets in a car in Las Vegas. 6 months later, March 1997, Notorious B.I.G., Biggie Smalls, died in almost exactly the same circumstances. And then in the coming years, you had artists like Aaliyah, who died in a plane crash, aged 22, in 2001. Jam Master Jay, who was shot in a recording studio when that classic lone nutter gunman that we hear so much about burst into the studio and shot him. Lisa Left Eye Lopez, part of the group TLC, died in a plane crash. Then, of course, more recently, you've got Michael Jackson, 2009, lots of strange circumstances surrounding his death, lots of unanswered questions. You've got Amy Winehouse last year.
The 27 Club.
The 27 Club, exactly. The latest member. And then you've got Whitney Houston, who died in February this year. And so Griff's suggestion is that in each of these cases, and there may have been others, you've got a prominent figure in the music industry who, as part of their induction process, if you like, as part of their being brought into the very high levels of the industry, they are required to offer up a sacrifice of somebody that's close to them. And, you know, again, I know this is going to sound outlandish to a lot of people, but you can watch Griff's videos on YouTube about it. And once you've got used to the idea and you've looked into the information a bit more, it may become more plausible. Mm-hmm. So his suggestion is that Tupac was connected to Suge Knight, who was the executive CEO of Death Row Records, mm-hmm. which was Tupac's label at the time. Suge Knight's been in and out of jail who knows how many times over the years. But the suggestion is that, you know, he was involved in, he knowingly sort of took part in Tupac's murder. That's the theory. When it comes to Biggie, you've got the character Sean Combs, Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, Diddy, various pseudonyms, best known as Puff Daddy, who's quite a shady character, actually. Wouldn't trust him to tell you the time in a clock factory, actually.
Yeah, he has that look about him, doesn't he?
Well, that's why he wears dark glasses, so uh-huh. you can't see his eyes.
Hiding his soul, if he has one.
Exactly. The windows to his soul. Yeah, exactly. Hence the glasses. Aaliyah was, according to the Griff theory, was connected to Damon Dash, who co-founded Rockefeller Records, there's a name to conjure with, mm-hmm. with Jay-Z. So when Jay-Z burst onto the scene in 1996, he had his own label, Rockefeller Records, in conjunction with Damon Dash. And Damon Dash was apparently in a relationship with Aaliyah at the time that she died. And then Jam Master Jay and Left Eye and others are a little more unclear. But that's the theory put forward by Griff. And there are other people that have kind of adopted that as well. And I think it's definitely worth people considering before just throwing it out because it sounds too ridiculous.
That's right.
Because this sort of thing does go on all the time, unfortunately.
Well, speaking of Jay-Z, he uses a lot of Illuminati symbolism, and I wanted to play this little clip of him being confronted about that in an interview.
Okay.
Well, Jay, you know, I have to ask you, this first day that I said you were coming up, this would be before I knew that these guys were coming, people are really buying into this, that you are some sort of Illuminati, devil-worshipping, Freemason, something.
Man,
what are you up to that I wasn't aware of?
I don't know. I don't know where it came from. I don't know where it started, but, you know.
Well, there's all these images in videos that people are saying are deliberate. My question to you is, are you messing with people and doing this on purpose?
No, not me. No, never done that before. Why would I do that? That's retarded. Be honest with you, I really think it's really silly, mm-hmm. you know. For the record, you know, I of course believe in God, but I believe in one God. You know, if people must know my religious beliefs, I believe in one God. I don't believe in religion. I don't believe in Christians or Muslims. I think all that separates people. I think it's one God. I think it's all the same God, and I don't believe in hell. But as far as God, of course I believe in God. And am I a part of some type of sect or cult? That sounds stupid to me. It's like ignorant to even say. And I guess that'll be the last time I address that. But, you know, it's really
aren't there little secret societies?
Yeah, right here. There's the mob squad. I mean, Rock Nation is the gang. I mean, but as far as, you know, I can't even get in a golf club in Palm Springs. I'm from Marcy Projects. Imagine. They just think about that, like
they wouldn't let you in the club, you saying?
Of course not. How? People that control the world, and you know.
Do you believe that those sort of organizations exist?
I think there's friends. I think there's cliques of friends who control things. I don't know if it's a devil worshiping sect. I think that's a little Tom Hanks.
Right.
but I believe there's cliques of people that control the world. Like if you know, Jeezy's my man. I got Atlanta. I go down to Atlanta. I got that thing. You know, on the whole, you come down Brooklyn. You got that thing. I go down to Virginia. But you know, that's just natural process. You know, I'm sure Obama has his people that you know, everything is good.
So he rocks with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, as far as you know, how far people are taking it, and, you know, I
it's
guess
kind of surprising.
I guess, you know, I guess I'm an entertainer. As long as people entertain, it's fine. But, you know, that's not my thing.
Okay. So you don't intentionally do this to just put people in a frenzy.
I'm an entertainer at the end of the day. But, you know.
So the next video.
Push your buttons. Maybe I push your buttons, but, you know.
But that's all it is.
Yeah.
All right.
But, you know. Whatever.
What is it? What?
But you don't have to do that these days. People make up their own things and they just run with it.
Yes, but you antagonizing it takes it to a whole other level.
No, that's just the comic in me.
Some sort of comedian?
Yeah, it's humor. It seems it's funny to me.
You know? You had to be surprised how seriously two people would take that.
How far it went, yeah.
Has he tried to initiate either one of you guys into any form of cult or satanic?
Yeah. All black cult.
The money gang.
The money gang.
The money gang.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all Jesus about the money.
So what do you think about that?
Well, I like the way he got the Obama name check in there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, the Prez is having parties at the White House now, right? He's having hip-hop people over.
Well, yeah, I hear he's gone off hip-hop these days, though. He's more of an indie kid now, apparently. yeah, I've heard that clip before, and I think it's interesting that sort of question comes up in interviews now,
yeah.
Because it never used to.
Well, it's because of angels and demons, right? That's people's reference to the Illuminati now.
Well, that's right. That's right. You know, the Dan Brown book has a lot to answer for in terms of coloring people's perceptions of what the Illuminati is, I think, which is not the way it's presented in that book. But I just think it's interesting that question has to come up in interviews and they feel the need to ask it. And it obviously shows that so many people now are getting little whisperings of, oh, Jay-Z's Illuminati, and if they don't know what Illuminati is, it's going to make them curious as to what this whole thing's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the thing to point out is that none of these artists are in the Illuminati, if you want to call it that. The Illuminati wouldn't have them in their top ranks. You know, they're basically stooges, puppets, foot soldiers for the Illuminati, if you want to call it that. You know, this control system uses various different professions and various different people to advance its agenda, and these artists are just an aspect of that. And as for Jay saying, you know, denying that he's a part of the whole thing, well, of course he would. You know, what's he going to say?
I'm in on it. Yes, I'm a mind-controlled servant.
yeah. I'll put my hands up. Okay, you got me. How long is he going to last then if he comes out and admits it? I've heard Kanye West confronted in an interview, and he said, I don't even know what the Illuminati is. So that's his answer.
Well, I have to say, though, Jay-Z, his manager should have prepped him better on how to respond to that question, because it was pretty weak the way he responded it. You know, you know, you know, you know.
Yeah, I guess he just thought that saying he didn't know what it was enough. I've heard Jessie J, the British artist, questioned about it, and she's just said, oh, I don't have time for that. You know, I'm young, I'm having fun, I don't have time for secret societies. But, you know, what are they going to say? Of course they're going to deny it. And I think Illuminati has become a bit of a buzzword, actually, in music.
Oh, definitely.
You're hearing a lot of references to it in tracks now, particularly in hip-hop tracks. There's a current one by Rick Ross where the lyric goes, he's making money, he must be Illuminati. And so the phrase is definitely entering the public consciousness.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if the controllers have realized that people are sort of paying attention to this idea that their artists might be controlled in a major way. And so they're doing a bit of damage limitation by trying to write it off as something quite harmless.
Mm.
That's my impression.
So what do you know about music production? Do you think specific frequencies or special effects are intentionally being used?
Well, yeah, I don't know a lot about the production process from experience, but it's something I have looked into. And a document that I've got here, which is of great interest, concerns the frequency at which popular music, pretty much all music now, is recorded, the standard tuning pitch. And it's 440 hertz, apparently. The document that I just printed off earlier refers to 432 hertz being the cosmic key of the universe. The human body is encoded to receive music to 432 hertz because this is the resonant vibration with the universe and human cells. And it goes on to say that the 440 frequency was reportedly imposed by the Nazi Joseph Goebbels in 1939, when it was noticed that a sharper pitch between 440 and 450 hertz gave rise to soldiers in war in a kind of instability and aggression useful for military purposes. And we're told that ever since then, the standard tuning pitch for pretty much all recorded music has been 440, which goes against this sort of natural harmonic vibration that resonates with the human mind. So it was definitely interesting to hear that. And I've also heard about other studio techniques where frequencies are deliberately employed that are known to lead to certain emotional reactions in most people, as in negative reactions, you know, not harmonic, pleasant ones.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to be another part of the agenda.
And then you also have lyrics with their dumbing down messages, getting you obsessed with materialism and your body, basically.
Well, indeed. I mean, to listen to the average, I don't even call them R&B and hip-hop records anymore because they're just corny pop records, garbage.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're passed off as that. And to listen to the average record now by Rihanna or Lady Gaga or T-Pain or Flo Rida or, sorry to say, Kanye West now, and Lil Wayne and Nicki Minaj and Drake and so many others, your worldview, if you take these lyrics on board, is that life consists of buying brands, being materialistic, spending money, going partying in the club, staying out all night, getting drunk, getting high, having promiscuous, unprotected sex, and not much else, actually, because those are the only subjects that I hear cropping up in the records that are in bars,
yeah,
clubs, daytime radio, shops.
Yeah,
barbers,
you can't get away from it.
That's all you hear.
Even eating out in like a place that I would think would be like an old folks diner, I've heard top 40 bad hip hop. I'm like, this is just wrong. I'm seeing people that are like my grandma's age and they're listening to this music.
Exactly. I mean, you had the record by CeeLo Green. Forget You was the radio version. Everyone knows what the street version was. And you hear that played everywhere with, you know, families and... This never used to be allowed to happen.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sound like my dad here or some preacher or something.
But, it's okay.
I'm trying to be responsible about it. And you've got to remember the target market for this sort of music is teenagers, kids. And they're listening to records like Rihanna's S&M, which is talking about bondage, sadomasochism, you know, aimed at 15-year-old girls. Is this appropriate lyrical content? Why are radio stations playing this sort of thing? Lady Gaga, Judas, she's in love with Judas, you know. There's some really sick stuff going on here. And people say it's just entertainment, you know, it's just harmless fun. But why are only certain lyrical subjects getting through into records?
That's right. I worked in the music business. I heard lots of good music coming through, and it never got approved.
Exactly. It just doesn't get on the radio.
Music that makes you think or feel, or it's too political or spiritual, they're like, you know.
There you go. Actually, something very interesting was when Whitney Houston died in February of this year, there were a whole bunch of DJ tribute mixes, which always happens whenever an artist dies. You know, there were 500 Michael Jackson mixes out overnight. And I heard so many mixes of Whitney Houston's music. And I came to realize that pretty much every single track she ever put out was about positivity, love, uplifting, inspirational, optimistic stuff, almost without exception. And a lot of Michael Jackson's music was along those lines as well, particularly in his latter years. And it does seem to be that the industry doesn't like artists that talk about positive, empowering, uplifting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They only like you if you talk about materialism and all the rest of it. We have to get into auto-tune, really, again. Auto-tune is this horrible process where a singer's voice is plugged through a load of software and it comes out sounding like a robot. And, of course, everything has a cover story. And the cover story for auto-tune is it helps singers hit the desired notes. So if they're not the best singer in the world, the program realizes what note they're trying to hit, and it pitches the voice up or down to meet that note. But of course, the result is it makes them sound like a bloody robot.
Yeah.
And this process first emerged in about 2007 with the artist T-Pain. And pretty soon, everyone was on it. Chris Brown, Flo Rida, Kanye West made an entire album of auto-tune tracks. And then P. Diddy said he was going to do the same. I wish Kanye had said he was going to jump off a cliff, and then Puffy might have done as well. But everyone's making auto-tune records. And we're now in 2012, 5 years on. If it was just a passing trend, why is it still in music now? Every DJ, every music fan, every music head you speak to hates it. it sounds shite. Mm-hmm. But everyone is using it. So what's the agenda there? My view on it is that it links in with the automation of society generally, and this reverence for computers and machinery and electronic ways of doing things. You used to be able to call your bank and speak to a human being. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you have to go through a robot system and wait for about an hour and a half before you can get through to a human. Then you've got speed cameras everywhere. You've got everything done online, everything done by internet. You go into the supermarket, you have to scan your own groceries now. And so I think AutoTune has been designed to fit in alongside all these other methods of electronic ways of doing things as part of a sort of dehumanization process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it works in conjunction with these soulless, vacuous, spirit-crushing lyrics
that we hear.
And it's like you said, it's stripping away any kind of essence of soul or humanity and just making everything machine-based
and
computerized.
Right.
And you listen to these records and they just sound utterly artificial, electronic, digital, soulless, you know, just not human in any way. That's my view on what AutoTune is being used for. How else to explain why it's been around for so long?
The future music for the monoculture world, huh?
Yeah, well, it's not a good thing, really. But I think it's important to keep a positive view of things, to be honest, because how much worse can things get in music?
Well, that's what I was going to ask.
Well, yeah, I think things are probably going to get worse before they get better. But I think it's very important to emphasize the positive in all things, really, because if all we're going to do is say the world is messed up, the music game isn't what it was, it's been hijacked and it will never be the same again, how are we going to make anything better? So what I started doing last year was a series of podcasts focusing on artists who are addressing all these kind of issues concerning not just the conspiracy, if you want to call it that, but nature of reality, consciousness, truth issues. And there are still a lot of artists out there making meaningful, very powerful music. Of course, you don't hear them on the radio and you don't hear them in clubs.
But why would we want to be on their radio stations? Why do we want their stores? You know, people have to stop thinking about that in terms of like, I want the record deal, you know?
Well, exactly. And there's a whole bunch of artists that are doing some great work out there. So I started a series of podcasts last year showcasing these artists and these tracks. And they've gone down very well on SoundCloud. And clearly there's an appetite for this stuff as a sort of antidote to all the spirit-crushing garbage that you hear on mainstream radio.
Yep.
And it is encouraging to know that there's a lot of artists that are very switched on and that know what's happening and are paying attention to it and want to communicate it to people. And I would like to think that in time, even the dumbed-down masses are going to get so sick of all this clone garbage that they hear all the time and are going to want something a bit different. And I like to think that that might provide an opportunity for some of this more meaningful stuff to get through.
That's true. After you eat too much junk food, eventually you're going to want a steak. Unless you've morphed into some other kind of weird hybrid zombie and you keep eating the Skittles and the Snickers, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But you know, there's encouragement to be drawn from the fact that there are artists making great music, and that's what I'm trying to put out there now. Because it's quite difficult for me, actually. I've discovered all this stuff. I now speak about it, and I can imagine I'm not particularly popular with certain record companies and certain, you know, corporations. But I still have to work in the industry because I'm a music guy. I love music. I made the decision many years ago to play it and write about it and be a DJ. And I want to continue doing that. But obviously, I don't want to peddle all this horrible garbage. There's enough others doing that. And so I try and steer clear of that and play what I consider to be good music. But yeah, it's a difficult balancing act to achieve, trying to alert people to what I believe is going on whilst continuing to work in the industry.
Well, it's good to do it. And maybe you can talk about it a little bit at the radio station when you're working. Huh? I'm sure you get some good reactions there.
Yeah, I dropped the odd little veiled comment in just to see what the reaction is. About as far as I can get away with.
So just the last question here for you. How do you see pop culture 20 years from now?
Well, that's a good one. It kind of ties in with the other level to what we're talking about, I guess. You hear a lot of commentators, researchers, authors, speakers that focus on conspiracy theory stuff, for want of a better phrase. You know, very much the stuff that's happening in this 3D, five sense, apparently physical world reality. And then you get a lot of speakers, who you've had on your programs, of course, who talk about consciousness, true nature of reality, and all of that. And I think it's quite rare that you get people that join all the dots and bring these two seemingly disparate, broad subjects together and show the connection between them. And it's something that I definitely can see. All this stuff that's going on in the real world connects into consciousness and what reality really is and who we really are, our true form, which is spirit form, not physical form. And we hear so much about this shift in human consciousness that's due towards the end of this year. And from all the evidence that I've seen and heard, I very much go along with that. And I very much believe that something along those lines is due. And I would like to think that more and more people are going to tap into those vibrations and are going to start to see themselves and the world in a radically different way to how they have previously. And I would like to think that given 20 years, that's going to have an effect on the way people are expressing themselves in music and the sort of music that people want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be nice to think that, you know, the demands placed on music makers in a few years' time are going to be to make meaningful music that talks about what's going on, which is hopefully very different to what's happening this year.
I mean, there's plenty of musicians out there right now that can just start creating the real music, you know, emanate a new kind of vibration, a new kind of flow, because that can scorch, you know, the hell from the planet and wake people up from mind control. It can be something that you just kind of put out into the ether, you know, as long as you're playing your guitar and kind of putting out that vibration out there. I think that it can help usher in this new kind of spirit. It doesn't matter if people hear it. The fact is, if you're playing it and you're putting out that kind of energy, that's what matters right now.
Absolutely. You know, music in its organic form can have an amazing effect on people and the atmosphere and, you know, the vibrational frequencies. It's all this artificial electronic stuff that is doing no good. But, yeah, you know, there's so many examples from cultures throughout the world and throughout the ages having used music for therapeutic and very positive and healing kind of means. And yeah, I believe that we will get back to that. I'm not sure how long it's going to take. And as I said, sadly, it looks as if things have to get worse before they get better.
Mm.
But again, you've got the idea of this new vibrational shift coming in and human consciousness tapping into it, humans in their masses kind of being a part of all of that. And who knows what kind of effect that's going to have on how situations are allowed to manifest.
That's right.
You know, you've got the control system looking to impose their agenda and take it ever further. And, you know, so many of your other guests can talk about the different facets of that. But, you know, that agenda can only be allowed to physically manifest given certain vibrational frequencies,
exactly.
Certain situations.
Exactly.
And if they're not there, then their plans are not going to work out and something else is going to happen instead.
So everyone out there, don't buy these records for your children.
Well, there you go. That's it. I mean, they're not good. I've got two young daughters myself, and I don't like to think of them listening to this sort of stuff when they're in their teenage years. I like to think that by then things will be better. But yeah, I think if people have, if this has resonated with people in any way, then one thing you can do is just not connect with this agenda at all. Don't have any association with these artists. Don't listen to their records. Don't watch the videos. Just don't cooperate with them, because you make an energetic connection with these artists and these videos, and you're kind of empowering their ability to have any effect. Whereas if people in their masses just refuse to connect with them in any way, there goes the power.
That's right. Awesome. Well, give us your website.
Okay, well, my main website is markdevlin.co.uk, and all the links are on there to the Facebook and the Twitter and all the rest of it. The SoundCloud page is probably going to be of interest to people, though. That's where I host all my podcasts, and there are, I think, 4 volumes so far of Just Music, which is where I'm introducing music by switched-on visionary artists who are making some great statements with some amazingly powerful music. And I've recently stepped that up to having chats with relevant people. So I've got one on there with David Icke, who knows a lot about the music industry, actually, very well informed. I've got a former presenter from BBC One Extra, which is the sister station to Radio 1 here in the UK, by the name of Nisha. I've got M1 of the group Dead Prez, hip-hop group. And I've got one with an artist from Yorkshire called Imani Hikima, who makes great music. And I've just completed one with a DJ called DJ Storm and MC Double L. And they're talking a lot of sense about what's happening in the industry. So they're all hosted on soundcloud.com/mark-devlin. So the bit at the end there is /mark-devlin on SoundCloud.
Maybe one day we'll have to put together a good music festival, one that we want to attend, huh?
Well, maybe you could perform on it.
That's right. Okay, well, since you're the DJ, as we say goodbye, how about you tell us about the song we're about to hear?
Well, the song is by the artist I just mentioned, Imani Hikima. He's out of Bradford, Yorkshire, north of England. This pretty much sums it all up, and it's good to end on a positive note. As I said, you've got to remain optimistic about how it's all going to work out, and this track is just great. He's talking about the awakening of human consciousness and how once you start to awaken to these things, you never go back to where you were. It's a robot's rebellion.
It's the robot's rebellion. It's the robot's rebellion. For far too long we've been asleep. Remote control are so sticky. But humankind is waking up. This time no one can put a stop. It's the robot's rebellion. Waking up out of millions. It's the robot's rebellion. Waking up out of millions.
It's time no one